Hi, everybody. Welcome to English Digest. I'm Stephanie.
And I'm Tom, and today we're going to continue talking about Light in August. It's a novel by William Faulkner. This, of course, is our literature unit. And we just got through the very complicated plot of the story. It involves race and foster parents and violence and abuse and things like that. And also, of course, is talking about life in the southern United States. And I believe that William Faulkner's novels were kind of going against the grain of southern literature at the time. They were producing these kind of sentimental love stories at the time. And Faulkner came out with these stories talking about the dark side of southern culture.
Real life. Yeah. And some of his stories weren't always, you know, fairy tales or happy stories. He told about real struggles that were happening in the South.
Okay, so let's get to it, everybody. Let's read the entire contents of today's lesson about the life and times of William Faulkner one time.
William Faulkner was born in Mississippi, U.S. in 1897.Apart from his time as a screenwriter in Hollywood, California, Faulkner lived in the southern state for the majority of his life. Faulkner was a bright child, and his mother, grandmother, and nanny all instilled in him an appreciation for literature and art. In his first few years of public education, Faulkner excelled, even skipping an entire grade. As he aged, however, he became withdrawn,and started playing hooky. In the end, he dropped out of school before graduating. He also failed to earn a diploma from the University of Mississippi, despite attending classes there. In 1929, Faulkner married Estelle, his childhood sweetheart. He hoped to support his new family by writing. However, after his early novel was heavily edited by his literary agent,He became indifferent to the publishing industry and focused on writing as he pleased. This ended up working in his favor, as Faulkner's novel, The Sound and the Fury, was published soon after. Faulkner was also a prolific writer of short stories, and shortly after his marriage, he earned enough money from his short stories to buy a house. Later on in life, Faulkner was awarded the Nobel Prize in Literature,and two Pulitzer Prizes for his works. Faulkner set many of his novels in a fictional county in Mississippi, which served as a microcosm of the South. In doing this, Faulkner was able to examine the culture, attitudes, and traditions of the South from a distance. His interest in history, which stemmed from his great-grandfather's involvement in, and stories from the American Civil War,is visible in many of his works. Moreover, being raised by a black nanny had a huge influence on Faulkner's exploration of racial themes, particularly in Light in August.
Let's talk about today's lesson, Light in August, a story of Southern strife.And this is the second day of our literature unit. And, of course, as always, we're going to talk about the author himself today, William Faulkner. He was born in Mississippi, USA, way back in 1897. In Mississippi, M-I-S-S-I-S-S-I-P-P-I.
Love it. I almost did that in day one, M-I-S-S-I-S-S-I-P-P-I.
Yeah, it's a little tongue twister that all kids knew. Mississippi, of course, the Mississippi River is a famous river in the United States as well.
It's hard to spell in.So we had to have a little bit of a game for kids to learn how to spell that darn word. So many S's and I's and P's.
But double of everything, yeah. S-S, I-S-S, I-P-P-I, except there are four I's in there and just one M. But that's a state in the southern United States. I think it's right next to Arkansas there and Alabama on the east, Mississippi there. I think Jackson is the capital. But in any case, he was born in Mississippi at the end of the 19th century. 19th century, and apart from his time as a screenwriter in Hollywood, California, Faulkner lived in the southern state for the majority of his life. So majority, most of his life, he lived in Mississippi. Apart from his time in Hollywood, if you don't consider that time, he pretty much lived all his life in Mississippi. So for a short time, he was a screenwriter in Hollywood. He moved out to California there, maybe got a job offer. You're a good writer. You can write scripts for movies. That's what a screenwriter does. They write scripts for movies.
So Faulkner was a bright child. He was pretty smart when he was a little guy. And his mother, grandmother, and nanny all instilled in him an appreciation for literature and art. So we've got the women in his life who are making sure that he is surrounded by literature and art and has a lot of education in that. So his nanny, we're going to find out, played a very big role in the way he wrote and some of the themes he wrote about, because his nanny was a black nanny, a black woman. So that had a big influence on him. If you instill something in someone, you plant or develop something in them. Usually we use this word to talk about parents who instill good values in their kids, or teachers who instill a love of music or math or history in their students. So you kind of plant that in someone and it develops and grows over time. So he had a real appreciation for literature and art because of these women.
I suppose my father instilled in me an interest in music. He had lots of soundtrack albums from Broadway musicals and things like that.
Love.
Along with his Herb Alberts and the Tijuana Brass Collection. That was very influential to me. But in any case here, his nanny instilled in him, well, at least his parents did, and well, his mother and his grandmother. I don't know what the father was doing at this point, or the grandfather. Maybe he was dead. Who knows? But as you said, the women in his family got him interested in literature and arts. And in his first few years of public education, Faulkner excelled, even skipping an entire grade. So he was a gifted child. He excelled in school. To excel just means you do really, really well. Excel, that's a verb. So he was very proficient in his classes, and he was so good that he could skip an entire grade. Maybe he was in fifth grade one year, and they thought, you're too smart for sixth grade. You just go on to seventh grade. And or maybe it was a later grade. Who knows? But he skipped an entire grade. He just jumped over it.
Yeah, it happens a lot with really bright kids. Sometimes they'll be put in special classes, but oftentimes they let them skip a grade. It's not good, though, if the boy is rather small, if he's shorter than the rest of his classmates. Sometimes it causes more problems socially than you expect. But excel, see that word excellent? You've got that word excel in there. When I see someone who excels at something, I automatically think they're doing much better than normal people. You know, you can excel at different things. You can excel at sports, music, math. I think Taiwan in general excels at math. Wow, they're really good at that when they get over into the Western countries. They're always much better students. So as he aged, as he became older, however, he became withdrawn and started playing hooky. If you become withdrawn or start withdrawing, you kind of hold yourself back from social groups. You don't really get in there and participate. You don't say very much. You stay quiet. And that happens to a lot of kids who are shy or quiet, or maybe they just don't feel like they fit in, so they stop, you know, getting in there and participating in different social activities. If you play hooky, that means you're ditching school. We didn't say play hooky when I was young. We would say, oh, I don't want to go to school today. I'm going to ditch class, D-I-T-C-H, ditch class. There are other ways to talk about that. You can cut class, which means you don't attend either, maybe for a day or two. I ditched a little bit. I ditched some of my classes. Not all day, but I would ditch some of my classes. But if you play hooky, that's kind of an old-fashioned phrase to mean you cut class, you don't go to school when you should.
It was hard to play hooky in my hometown because it was so small. And if you played hooky, of course, the only place to really go was like downtown or something. And you would be spotted by people in the stores there pretty soon. And they would report you. So, yeah,
really?
It was quite difficult to play hooky in my hometown. You pretty much had to go to school all the time. In the end, however, he dropped out of school before graduating. So he was withdrawn, kind of reserved, quiet, shy.
Yeah.
And he started skipping school, playing hooky. So later on, he dropped out of school before he graduated. He just quit school. To drop out means to quit school before he could graduate. Somehow he got into the University of Mississippi, however, but he failed to earn a diploma from Ole Miss, as it's oftentimes referred to, despite attending classes there. So even though he went to classes at the University of Mississippi, he still did not earn a diploma, which could be your degree, your Bachelor of Arts, Bachelor of Science, or whatever. That would be your diploma, the actual document itself.
Yeah, the actual piece of paper. It looks kind of like a certificate that you – a lot of people frame those and put them on the wall. I don't even know where my diplomas are. Not really interested in that.
Well, I brought mine with me because I needed it to get, jobs and
I had to
visa and stuff.
Oh, see, and I came here and I didn't even think – I didn't think I was going to stay very long. Ha, 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 ha. But I actually had to write to my schools and get copies of everything sent to me. So in the next paragraph, guys, it starts out talking about who he fell in love with. So in 1929, he married his childhood sweetheart. Her name was Estelle, kind of an old-fashioned female name, Estelle. You don't see it much anymore. But back then, it was very popular, like the 1920s, 30s. You heard of Estelle.
I've heard of Stella before. It's
Stella
related.
Too.
I believe it means star in Latin, estrella in Espanol.
Right.
Yes, that's who he married, and she was his childhood sweetheart. He met her when he was very, very young, and they grew up to marry each other. Isn't that sweet?
Yep.
Isn't that romantic? We'll talk about how he supported his family by writing in just a couple of seconds, but we're going to take a break right now. Please stay tuned.
大家好，欢迎收听 English Digest， 我是哈利。今天我们要阅读的文章是 Unit 11文学单元的第二天课程。今天的文章将会介绍美国知名小说家 William Faulkner 的生平。他也被誉为美国文学史上最具影响力的作家之一。Faulkner 在西元1897年出生于美国密西西比州。我们看到第一段的第二句 Apart from his time as a screenwriter in Hollywood, California, Faulkner lived in the southern state for the majority of his life.除了在加州好莱坞当剧本作家的那段时间外，福克纳一生大多数时光都住在南方的密西西比州。这句一开始有一个介系词片语 apart from， 意思是除了什么之外，相当于 aside from。 英文中有一些表示除了什么之外的字词，语义上会有所不同。首先 in addition to 或 besides后面接名词或 ving， 表示有包括后面所接的事物。例如 ,in addition to playing tennis, my brother also enjoys golf. 除了打网球之外，我哥哥也喜欢打高尔夫。另外 ,except 则是不包含后面所接的事物。例如 ,I like all kinds of sports except swimming. 我喜欢各种运动，除了游泳。而 aside 或 apart from 同时具有 in addition to 和 except 的意思，所以在使用时要注意语义是否表达清楚。例如 There are a few grammatical errors in your report. Aside from that, your paper is perfect. 你的报告有一些文法错误，除了那些错误之外，你的报告很完美。我们接着看到第一段的倒数第三句。As he aged, however, he became withdrawn and started playing hooky. 然而当他年纪渐长时，他变得内向并开始逃学。本句用了一个形容词 withdraw， 意思是 very shy and quiet, preferring not to talk to other people. 也就是沉默寡言的、孤僻的的意思。例如 ,The old man became withdrawn after his beloved wife's death. 在亲爱的妻子过世后，这名老人变得孤僻。Withdrawn 如果去掉 n, 就变成动词 withdraw。动词三态为 withdraw, withdrew, withdrawn。有以下几个常见的意思。例如退出、不参加。After spraining his wrist, Tom withdrew from the competition.汤姆在扭伤手腕后退出比赛。Withdraw 还有提领的意思。例如 ,Members of our bank can withdraw cash at any of our branches. 我们银行的成员可以在我们的任一个分行提领现金。此外 ,Withdraw 还有收回、停止提供的意思。After the celebrity's scandal was revealed, many of his fans withdrew their support.在这位名人的丑闻被揭露后，他的许多粉丝收回对他的支持。
We're going to take a quick break. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Okay, to continue our narrative about William Faulkner, we're talking about his life when he was a kid, when he went to school and stuff like that. Well, let's talk about his married life. In 1929, he married his childhood sweetheart. Her name was Estelle, and he hoped to support his new family by writing. Okay, so he thought, yes, if I write short stories or novels and sell them to publishers, I can make enough money to support my family. I can take care of my wife. I can feed my baby.
Great.
I can bring home the bacon. However, after his early novel was heavily edited by his literary agent,He became indifferent to the publishing industry and focused on writing as he pleased. So his early novel was edited by his literary agent. It was edited heavily. Now, if you edit something, that means you change things in the writing. Maybe you cut things out. Maybe you add some things here. You change the words, etc., etc. And, of course, if you're a writer, you don't want somebody to do that. Hey, this is what I wrote. I don't want you to change it. But a publisher might think, well, you know, if we present it to the public like this, it probably won't sell very well, or we'll get sued or something like that. So I definitely have to make these changes. So he edited the novel. This, of course, was his agent, the person who represented him to the publisher, I guess. So that's who an agent is. They act on your behalf.If you're an actor, of course, you'll have an agent. They try to get you jobs and things like that.
Right. Well, when that happened, it probably made him mad. It would make me really mad. He became indifferent to the publishing industry and focused on writing as he pleased. He wrote what he wanted to. If you're indifferent to something, it means you just don't care. Maybe you're going to see a movie and your group of friends all have opinions on which movie they want to see, and they ask you, and you could say, yeah, I don't care. But you could also say, I'm indifferent, which is very gouty, but it's a little bit more formal, but you could use it, definitely. I'm indifferent to that. I don't care. I don't care, man. So he became indifferent to the publishing industry, which means, you know, he stopped caring so much what they thought. Who cares? If they're going to take what I have and change it so much, forget that. I'm going to write what I want. And that's what he did. And it actually worked out for him. The next sentence says, this ended up working in his favor. If something works in your favor...it just means it's to your benefit. It is something that gives you an advantage. So Faulkner's novel, The Sound and the Fury, the most famous novel he's written, was published soon after. So I think it was good that he got upset and became indifferent, because then he wrote things that actually led to his big, big career.
Yeah, I think The Sound and the Fury was the book that I tried to read, but I only got a couple of pages into it when I realized it was over my head.
I think that was turned into a movie.
I assume it
would
have
been. I'm going to look it up while you talk.
Okay, very good. But again, Faulkner's writing style can be quite complicated. Maybe I should give it a try. Of course, I'm much more intelligent now than I was back then when I tried to read that book. So maybe I'm smart enough to read this book now. But it was published soon after he decided to write as he pleased. And so he never looked back after that. And Faulkner was also a prolific writer of short stories, which, of course, are not as long as novels. And if you're prolific, that means you produce a lot of stuff. I believe Mozart was a prolific conductor or prolific
composer.
Composer, that's the word I was looking for.
Very much so.
Produced a lot of stuff in a short amount of time. So, yes, you could try his short stories. He's got a lot of them. And shortly after his marriage, shortly after he got married, he earned enough money from his short stories to buy a house.
Good.
So therefore, he could support his family.
I looked up. The Sound and the Fury was made just recently in 2014.
Wow.
By James Franco. He is an actor, but he also directed it. Oh, but guys, it got very low ratings.
So don't see it.
Out of 10 stars, it got 4.8. That's not good.
Ooh.
So anyway, I think it was made earlier than that, though, too. Don't quote.
Could have been.
Don't quote me. Which means, you know, don't take what I said as fact. You have to check for yourself. I love IMDb.com. It's an internet database for movies and TV shows. Look it up. So he made a lot of money from those wonderful short stories. Actually, I think that's what he's most famous for, even more than The Sound and the Fury, are his short stories. You might pick those up because they're quick and they're interesting. Later on in life, he was awarded the Nobel Prize in Literature and 2 Pulitzer Prizes for his works. To get 2 in different years is pretty much amazing. Mm. So in the final paragraph, it says he set many of his novels in a fictional county in Mississippi, which served as a microcosm of the South. This fictional county has such a hard name to pronounce. I'm not going to try. Maybe you can find it again, Tom. We were looking it up before we started our program. It looks like it's an Indian name, a Native American name. But if you're looking at something that's fictional or is fiction, it's made up. It's not real. It was invented by someone's imagination. So a fictional county, it doesn't really exist. We have a lot of those when we have books or movies. They don't want to offend a town or a people. So sometimes the story will be set in a fictional town or a fictional country even sometimes.
Like a soap opera my mother used to watch As the World Turns.
Yeah.
It was set in the fictional town of Oakdale. That's a town that doesn't exist anywhere.
Oh, I didn't know that, really.
Yeah, okay. I knew that because my mother watched those serials when I was a kid. But in any case, yes, he set these novels in this fictional county in Mississippi, and I couldn't pronounce the name myself, but it served as a microcosm of the South. Microcosm is kind of like a small sort of experimental place, I guess, which kind of represents all the characteristics of the larger area. So, yes, this county kind of represented all of the southern United States.
Kind of like having a miniature model of something. So you're looking at something in a small size, but it represents a bigger thing. So in doing this, Faulkner was able to examine the culture, the attitudes, the traditions, all of these things that you could find in the South, but from a distance. And he wasn't offending anybody, at least because he was using this fake county name. So his interest in history, which stemmed or came from his great-grandfather's involvement in the American Civil War and from stories from the American Civil War, is visible in many of his works. A stem is a part of a plant that comes from the stalk of a flower or bush. So the stems reach out. So if it stems from, it means it comes from that particular thing. His great-grandfather was involved in the Civil War that took place in America around the 1860s, in the middle of that 1860 decade. So if you're involved, it means you have some sort of involvement. You're participating. You're taking part in something. And notice here we're using two prepositions in the middle of the sentence. His interest in history, which stemmed from his great-grandfather's involvement in, that is supposed to be linked to American Civil War, in and stories from, because you can't say his grandfather's involvement from the Civil War. That doesn't work. So we need two different prepositions. Don't let that throw you off. So when you read it, you just kind of have to stop a little bit, which stem from his great-grandfather's involvement in and stories from the American Civil War.
Right. So because he's from Mississippi, I assume his great-grandfather fought for the Confederacy. And when he returned, of course, he told stories. Well, you know, when we were at Appomattox Courthouse, you know, this is what happened there, etc. So he had lots of stories about the Civil War. And that's visible in a lot of his works. That influence can be seen in his works of literature, his novels, and his short stories. You can tell that he's really interested in history. He probably makes lots of references to historical events in his writing. It's visible. It's present there. Mm. Now, moreover, or in addition, being raised by a black nanny had a huge influence on Faulkner's exploration of racial themes, particularly in Light of August. So his nanny, of course, was black, African-American, and she, of course, had things to say to him about growing up black and being black in the South and stuff and things that happened to her. So, of course, that influenced his writing as well. So he explored these racial themes. He wrote about the things that his nanny talked about, and particularly this happens in Light in August. As you know, race is part of this work of literature as well. So, yes, if you want to learn about the southern United States and the culture of that period of time, this is a good novel to try. Okay, that brings us to the end of our explanation. Here comes our Chinese teacher.
文章的第二段提到 Faulkner 在自己的小说被编辑人员大幅修改之后，他开始只集中创作自己想写的作品。我们看到第二段的第四句， This ended up working in his favor.As Faulkner's novel, The Sound and the Fury, was published soon after. 结果这么做对福克纳有利，因为他的小说《喧嚣与愤怒》不久之后就出版了。本句有一个动词片语 end up, 意思是最后怎么样，或是以点点点结束。其后可接 ving, 名词或介系词片语。Our plan was seriously delayed.And we ended up spending one night at the airport. 我们的班机被严重耽搁，而我们最后在机场里度过一夜。The criminal was arrested and ended up in prison. 这名罪犯被逮捕，最后被关进监狱。文章的最后一段提到 Faulkner 的小说中常呈现美国南方的文化和传统。我们看到这一段的第一句，Faulkner set many of his novels in a fictional county in Mississippi, which served as a microcosm of the South. 福克纳将他许多小说的背景设定在密西西比州一个虚构的郡，当作美国南方的缩影。本句的关系代名词是 which, 代替先行词 Mississippi。当先行词是专有名词或具有独一无二的特性时，这时候冠代前面就要加上逗号。例如 ,my father, 逗号 ,who always looks serious, 逗号 ,is actually very funny. 我爸爸看起来总是严肃，但实际上很好笑。这时候冠代 who 前面要加逗号，如果不加逗号的话，变成你有很多个爸爸，而你在描述的是其中一个看起来总是很严肃的爸爸。以上就是今天的课程，谢谢大家收听。
Okay, that brings us to the end of our lesson for today, but join us again next time when we actually go back to the novel and talk about some of the themes and ideas that you can learn about if you read this book. Okay, thank you for joining us. From all of us here at English Digest, I'm Tom.
I'm Stephanie.
Bye.